We are now joined on our line by our featured guest this week, actor Ross Phillips. You know him from the CW's great show, Heart of Dixie. You also know him more recently from AMC's Halt and Catch Fire. Ross, how are you this fine evening?
I'm doing well, guys. How are we doing?
Yeah, right. Really good. Really good Sunday evening. You're based here in Southern California, is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, great weather today. It was a great, great day.
You know, I wouldn't really be able to tell you that much as I had a matinee, and then from there I ran to a climbing gym.
Wow. Okay. That's fitness. I actually woke up this morning in Washington, D.C., where the weather was nowhere near as nice as it was when I got off the plane. One of the great things about Southern California. Now, I've got to ask you, before we talk about the great projects that you're involved in, what are listeners will have seen on TV and the stuff that you're doing now on the stage. I just want to ask you a bit of a biographical question. So is it correct you were born and grew up in the States, but you have two British parents?
Yeah. My parents are both from England. They met in the Royal Navy and then went on honeymoon to Stowe, Vermont, where they stayed for 35 years.
Wow.
Raised three children who, and now funnily enough, we're all in California. So we have made our way across the country as a pack.
Stowe is a beautiful part of the world. Vermont's incredibly beautiful part of the world. But, you know, people like that sunshine. People like that sunshine. Now I've got to ask you, growing up in that sort of household, so you're growing up in the United States, but you come home at the end of school, and your house, was it that different? Did you grow up noticing when you went over to a friend's house, well, they don't have tea for their evening meal. Where are their crumpets? Where are their Marmite? I keep asking my neighbors for Marmite, and no one's given me any. Did you begin to feel that there were differences in your household from your friends?
Yeah, I always describe it as having had probably the least amount of culture clash that you possibly could have had growing up. I mean, the oddest of things that my parents would say differently, like aluminium or spelling color with a U, just these little things that you catch, which I've tried to hold on to some extent, just for just a variable of it, being able to say vitamin as opposed to vitamin.
Did that really throw off your spelling grades, like in third grade when you started using S's rather than Z's and dropping all these extraneous U's in your word?
Well, that was my excuse. You know, when they told me that I failed, I was always like, well, you don't understand, my parents are both British.
And you're being persecuted because of your nationality.
Exactly. You got it.
Now you spend time back in the home country, in the motherland occasionally, is that
true?
Yeah,
my grandmother still lives in Bristol, as does the rest of my extended family. But my father was adopted, and we don't really know too many people from his family.
Okay.
When he was adopted, his parents or foster parents were old enough to be his grandparents. So they passed away at an early age, and he moved on to go into the Royal Navy, and that sort of became his family for a very long time.
So have you spent enough time in England to have a football team? Is there an English soccer team that you swear allegiance to, the local Bristol teams?
I'm fully American in the way that I support the Patriots.
Okay.
Which can either get me a slap on the wrist or, you know, another slap on the wrist, really.
Right.
If I were pressed to say one team, it'd be Newcastle.
Okay, good northern team. They're a big team. Yeah. They don't win a lot, but they're a big, proud team.
Well, we were relegated, you know.
I know. I'm a fan of another English football team called Fulham that are actually in the championship with you. You guys look to be automatically promoted this year, which is a good thing.
Yes, yeah, that is true. I'll start watching again once we're back up.
Oh, fickle fan.
Yeah. Oh, my God, absolutely. I can't get up in time to watch the games. My buddy is a big Chelsea fan.
Oh, yeah.
He'll get up at, like, 4 a.m. to watch any game.
That is just more dedication than I think I can manage for almost anything. I had to get up at 4 a.m. this morning to catch a flight. That's the best I can do. If I need to be physically transported, I will do that. But that's why God invented TiVo. We can just watch it at noon. I'm not going to find out who wins. Now I want to ask you a little bit about technology, because you're involved in this great, great show. halt and catch fire.
Yeah.
Were you a techie kind of person before that, or did you just, you're an actor, you'll read in any character you're given, neurosurgeon, you know, performance artist, you know, computer programmer? How did you approach the subject matter of Halt and Catch Fire?
Well, it's a funny show, mostly because I was one of sort of the odd men out in that I played the son of one of the CEOs of the company there. Right. The guy who basically provided the seed money, who was more of the businessman. And so my character arc in that show was a little bit more centric on, like, family life in Texas and
right.
being a family man and a businessman and sort of the middle class sort of you get a job, you stay with that company for 30 years. And then, you know, your son follows in your footsteps, maybe does the same thing. And sort of when that show is taking place, a lot of that is changing.
Right.
You know, you're not going to always follow your father's footsteps. You might be able to go out on your own. And it's a little bit turned on its head there, where my father in the show goes to jail. And spoilers, but... he goes to jail and then gets out, and I have followed in his footsteps while he was in jail, and he gets out and goes, I don't want to do that anymore, so it throws my character for a loop. And that's, I mean, that's a great, great father-son dynamic, because we've all experienced that with our fathers, I think, at one point or another, where, you know, you want to get closer to this person who you're half of.
Right.
And it sometimes you just lose each other. It's actually quite the same in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof,
which is this great play that you're involved in now. I want to ask, before you transition to your play, I want to ask you one kind of exit question on the two shows that most people will know you from Halt and Catch Fire, which is very much the kind of new wave, the golden age of TV. Who would have thought 10 years ago we'd have a show about computers and programmers and this sort of historical thing about the creation of the computer industry? That's a very new TV show. But the show probably more people know you from is just classic TV from forever,
yeah.
Heart of Dixie. How do you transition, or do you approach it differently when you're doing kind of traditional old-fashioned TV? And Heart of Dixie, great show, great cast. It's very much in line with what we've been doing on TV for 70 years. But Halt and Catch Fire, something new, something edgier. Do you approach each role differently, or to you it's all the same? A role is a role.
No, yeah, of course you have to. I mean, you. I would say that... Heart of Dixie is a great example of what I like to call sit-down television, which is something that you can really binge and watch episode after episode, and it makes you feel things, and
right.
It's sort of very well orchestrated in a way that we all know. And so with that, it's a little bit more mechanical. You know, you go in and you say, okay, I know that this is the joke. I know that at this point,
yes.
I need to add stakes to it so that it, you know, so that everybody knows that my character, who's 25 years old, is going to cry over something as simple as spilled milk.
Right.
You know, and that's where the comedy comes, because everybody knows a 25-year-old doesn't cry over spilled milk. And so that's a little bit more mechanical. Whereas with Halt and Catch Fire, it's a little bit more emotionally invested, I would say. I'm actually using things from my own life in order to enliven what the character is going through.
Okay.
Yeah. So, for instance, the thing with the dad.
Right.
If you're having trouble with your dad, that's something that I think a lot of men can relate to. And so,
oh, absolutely.
I would use my own father and I's relationship, and that sort of enlivens that. It actually takes a lot of pressure off it, I think, because you can't really be wrong at that point.
You're doing what feels natural, what feels right to you. Like when you're on stage, and
yeah.
You're on stage now in an amazing, amazing play. Of course, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Tennessee Williams.
Yeah.
Great, great piece of drama. You've got the dysfunctional Southern family. You've got the cotton tycoon Big Daddy. It people really just chewing the scenery. These are big roles. These are great roles. What was this one of those plays that you thought, you know, ever since you began acting in ninth grade, I got to do this play?
Yeah, I mean, very recently, I would say, in the last couple of years, revisited a lot of Tennessee Williams. I went to school, I went to conservatory at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh. And while we were there, they have you read all these plays, and you're constantly reading voraciously, making your way through the canon of American playwrights and Shakespeare and Restoration and all these things. And I, at some point, must have skipped over a lot of Tennessee's work until I would say about 3 or 4 years ago, when I sat down and read every single one of his plays and couldn't stop. And at that point, I was still pretty young for the role of Brick, and which is what I play in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to understand what this guy is going through. There's so much here. And even doing it now, I'll tell you what, we rehearsed for, I think, 7 weeks. And in those 7 weeks, the more you work on it, the more you're like, oh my gosh, there's so much here. There's so much humanity here that you're trying to enliven and bring to the stage to show other people, to really share with the community. And I spent a lot of time working on it, and I still feel like I could spend months and months and months on this.
Now, give our listeners the details. It sounds like an amazing play. If they want to buy tickets, if they want to go and see this play, how do they do that? When, where, and all the other details?
Yeah, please. We are running through May 7th. It will be in Glendale at the new space that's just been constructed. You can get tickets at anteus.org, which is anteus.org. And that's in the Kiki and David Gindler Performing Arts Center. It is a beautiful new theater. We're the first play in there. And I really have to tell you, it is an amazing play directed by Cameron Watson. The cast, both casts, it's double cast.
Okay.
Fantastic actors.
So they can see it twice. You have to see it twice then.
Please do, because each actor has a different take on it. And I don't know how they go about splitting us up into two different casts, because everybody is so good. It's such a joy to get to work with such amazingly talented, passionate actors in Los Angeles.
Now, it sounds like an amazing, amazing play, amazing performance. I want to thank you so much, Ross Phillips, star of CW's Heart of Dixie. Then You Knew and Loved Him on AMC's Halt and Catch Fire. Thank you so much, Ross, for being part of The Bigger Picture.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great night. Thanks for having me on.
Friends and neighbors, we're going to take a short commercial break.